Meet Sven. He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 5th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You should always talk about the show beforehand so we know who goes first and what's going on.
All right, I'll go first.
Okay, you go first. All right. Take it away.
All right, now I know our listeners are not table game players, per se, right? This is a poker show, real poker.
Right, real, table we're poker. Real poker, man.
But every once in a while, I run across a table game that has some value to poker players. I don't entirely know what the value is of this. But I know somebody out there can find some value in it. How's that?
Can you remember the last table game that had value to our listeners? I'm just curious, because you brought that up. You said every once in a while you like to... Can you remember one?
How about the Texas Hold'em Bonus Poker?
I thought you hated that.
I didn't say you had to like the game.
Oh, you said it had value for us.
Right. Because by looking at the probabilities and how the game works, it could, theoretically...
Okay.
Help you with your normal game. How's that?
All right.
That's what I'm trying
all
to say, right?
Understood.
All right. So I ran across a new one called Dealer Bluff.
Ooh, intriguing title.
All right. Our good friends at Wizard of Odds pointed this out to me. He says he's seen it played at the Wynn out in Las Vegas and a couple California card rooms. I'm not going to get into the whole details here, but you can get the whole explanation of it at wizardofodds.com/dealerbluff. But essentially, here's the deal. It's a stud poker game, but the dealer and player dealt 6 cards instead of 5, right? Or 7.
Right.
But they still have to make the best 5-card poker hand, right?
Right.
All right, the twist in this game is, unlike most table poker games, the dealer acts first. So, you know, in Caribbean stud or something like that, the players decide whether they want to call or fold, and then the dealer whips him up, you know, because he's got the odds on his right. But in this game, what they use is they... use a random number generator that's tied to the strength of the hand. So if you go to the website, they got all this explained and shows you probabilities. But the dealer can either raise 1x, 2x, or 3x. Can't fold. Right? And depending on the strength of the hand, the random number generator decides how much they're going to raise. So, for example, if the dealer has a royal flush, most of the time the random number generator is going to tell it to raise 3x. But because of the number generator, it might be 1x or 2x. And the same is if the dealer has absolutely nothing. Say, king high.
Right.
They may raise 3x. It's all based on the random number generator.
Now, is this random number generator, is this a computer game, table game?
Or no, it's a real game, but they've got like a little card hood thing.
Ah, okay. And that thing...
So I don't know whether the dealer... types in what the hand is, or just slides a card. I think he just slides the cards in, and it's smart enough that it reads it, and then tells the dealer, race 3X.
Holy cow. Wow.
See, you're it's intrigued. Like, you're actually
like,
intrigued.
It's like George Jetson poker. I think I'm more intrigued by the technology that's, you know, it's weird. It's really weird. So people looking on the live poker, looking to get in on the RCG.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, I'm down with that.
but the reason I brought it up is Michael Shackelford, the Wizard of Oz, he's famous for crunching the numbers on these. He's a real big math computer kind of guy, right?
Right.
He hasn't had time to do this yet, but he was able to get the mathematical calculations from ShuffleTech, which I believe is the company that probably made this game, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so here is the value to poker players, is they have, when you do the kind of math on this, you got to figure out the probabilities of hands being dealt. And so he's got a nice big chart there that explains all that. So, now granted, this is six cards, not seven or five.
And you get to see them all at once, too. You don't have to pay for each street like if you're playing a real stud game.
Right. But I do think maybe some of our listeners that are inclined to the math computer side, which is probably, roughly 98-90% of our listeners.
Absolutely. We're the only two who aren't into that. So,
But I think if they went to the website and kind of looked at it, somebody might be able to come up with at least something that kind of helps you when you're at a real table playing poker with seven cards.
So now I'm looking at the notes here on our thing, and it says, unlike other poker table games, the dealer can bluff here, right? So I'm in a fog here, or does the Wynn really want their employees taking a chance on things
but
like
not.
This?
That's why they have the random number generator.
But you said the dealer can bluff, so random number generator is bluffing for him.
Yeah, if you go to the website, you'll see how they do it. But that's why I said if it's a royal flush, they're not always going to raise 3x, which would be the normal thing.
Right.
And if they have nothing, they may also raise 3x, which is a bluff. But it's all
But the random generator tells them what to do.
And
regardless.
It's all based on percentages too, so they're not going to be, it's not like they're going to tell them something that's not going to be good for the house.
So you can read the dealer's face, though. The dealer looks down on a royal flush and goes,
I'm
not betting.
Yeah, I suppose you probably could.
And they got a surprised look on their face. You're like, whoa, I saw that. Your eyebrows arched. You got a huge hand.
Well, sure, they're always betting. It's just a matter of how much they're betting.
Okay.
Maybe you could actually read the dealer,
right? Wow. I'm not going to try it, but wow.
But you're going to stand behind me while I try
it, I'm going to stand behind you and go get him, Scott. And then I'm going to whisper all these misleading tells in your ear. Oh, she's bluffing, Scott. She's bluffing. Because she's raised her eyebrows.
Now, see, this is what's going to happen is I'm going to sit there. I'm going to drop two bills on this thing. And afterwards, you're going to go, why did you call that, Scott? You could tell that she was bluffing. My gosh.
Oh, my God. Well, that's pretty wild that they, So, you have to get the technology for it. You got to get the... Wow. There's a lot of research done in that game, you can tell.
You know,
to get that, to be able to offer something like that, they had to know that they were still going to make money on it.
Well, and they also tied some with a ubiquitous dealer side bet kind of thing, aces up and stuff, where they make all their money on these games. So avoid them. So this game's called Deal or Bluff, but speaking of bluffs, this is something I've had on the notes for a while, and I've been chewing around in my brain.
Yes, finally you're going to get this your chest. I mean, it's been on the file for this has been on the file since we were at the St. Petersburg Times, okay? I've been waiting for you to just spill your beans, man. Just go ahead. Tell me what it is you're getting at here.
All right. We're famous in poker for talking about bluffing, right? You have to be able to bluff, right?
Yes.
But we're also famous of saying you play the man, not the cards, right?
Yes.
And, a good player, people will go, that was a good move when he went all in with nothing there. Because he could tell by the action of the table that the opponents didn't have anything, and therefore he bluffed.
Right.
Is that really a bluff, is what I'm saying. Is there ever anything technically a bluff in the game if you are making a move based on the information available to you, not just your cards?
All right, well, that little last tagline there makes it interesting, because originally I was going to say sheer desperation could be a bluff, because you can't win unless you bet, and even then you're not certain, so it is strictly a bluff because you have no hand. I don't know. This could be up in the hierarchy of pain in the assdom of, the set versus trips argument. Oh, it has to be that you have two in your hand and flop one for it to be a set. Can't be called trips. God forbid that we call it trips when you have three of a kind. Trip means triple, means three, but God forbid if you don't have two in your hand, it's not a set. And so this could probably get up there with the pain assdom, because I don't know. I think technically, yes, anytime you don't have a hand that you know can't win and you bet, regardless of information or with information, it is a bluff, because bluff means you're lying, you're concealing the strength of your hand. So,
but you're not lying.
Well,
again, remember, poker is a game of betting using cards. It's not a card game where you bet.
So, all right, so then what if you get caught? Then it's a bluff. If you get caught and you lose, then it's a bluff, right?
Yeah, but you've made the decision based on the available information. Now, obviously, as you said, there are people that don't really know how to play the game, including us, that will just push all in when the information does not make sense for doing so. And we get snapped off, and then someone, oh, hey, I had to try. And that's not technically what I'm talking about here. Yeah, that, right. That's just bad play.
All right, so in other words,
it's not a bluff.
But this gets back to the skill versus luck game, then.
It does.
Another pain in the ass kind of argument where people say there's always luck and people say it's all skill and some people say it's a marriage of both. This is the same thing. If you believe it's skill, then there is no bluffing. There's just, what do they call it, controlled aggression and calculated risk, right. But no bluffing.
Probabilities taken personally. That's what our good friend Joe Conte has been putting on his Facebook page.
Yeah. I guess I see your point.
Let me throw a little twist in here, too. Now, we have never played, at least I know I haven't, maybe you haven't, no limit single draw poker yet. Have you played that yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Fasso's called that once or twice in the home game.
Really?
Yeah, no limit single draw.
All right.
We called it once at Frank's game when you weren't there, too.
Okay.
But yeah, it has been called.
All right. Now, that's a game that people will say is complete bluff. There's no information whatsoever.
Right.
It's just whoever has the biggest kahunas each hand, right?
Essentially. I mean, you could have a good hand once in a while, too, but there's a lot of bluffing in that game.
But yeah, if you play just your cards in that hand, you are going to get brutalized.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, what's your point? You keep staring at me.
My point is that I think some people will say, well, you have to bluff in that game. And my point is, there's no bluff in that game. You have no information. It's just a pure bet.
It's a gamble.
If you're sizing up, you're looking at people's souls and deciding, hey, if I raise all in here, they're going to run like a little girl.
So then, but it seems to me...
It has nothing to do with the cards. The cards are just insurance.
It seems to me, though, then you're breaking it down to, when you say that it's not skill anymore, and now it's gamble rather than skill.
No. I'm saying the skill is in deciding when to bet and how much to bet. That's the skill of poker.
Oh, yeah, but...
It has less to do with the cards.
Right, no, we've always known that.
And analyzing the situation.
Right,
so
right.
If you've analyzed the situation correctly, it doesn't matter whether you have a royal flush or whether you have seven high in your hand. The bet makes sense.
Right.
It's not a bluff.
Right, right. But it is a bluff, though. I mean, it's not a bluff in that you're sizing up the situation and becoming a skilled person at it, but you're still bluffing in the sense that you are indicating you have a bigger hand than you do, and you're getting them to fold, or the hand they think you have. And you're representing the hand that you hope they think you have, and you're making them fold. But it's still a bluff. A bluff, in its truest definition, is a misrepresentation or a lie. And that's what you're doing there by betting like that. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
What are you lying about?
You're lying about the strength of your hand. That's the lie.
But the strength of your hand doesn't matter.
Is a lie. The strength does, too. Of course it does.
If you get everybody to fold, it doesn't matter how strong your hand was.
That's what makes it
the bluff.
The
strength of your bet is what makes people
fold. But the bet is the bluff, not the cards. The bet is the bluff. The strength of your bet is the indication of the strength of your lie. If you don't have a hand, you bet a lot. That's a bluff because you're betting
a
lot of money indicating you have a big hand and you don't.
All right, let me ask you this. If you go all Annette Oberstrad or however I mispronounce her name whenever I talk about her, covering up your cards, never even look at your cards.
Right.
How could you say that she's bluffing if she does not have the proper information to bluff?
Well, she's not bluffing. She's bluffing the entire...
See, you just proved my point then.
No, see, actually, you're making a terrible point there.
How am I making a terrible point there?
If you aren't conscious of what you're doing, how could you be doing skill or bluffing? If you're just playing position and not cards at all, you don't know what you have, so therefore you can't know if you are bluffing or not.
Right.
So that's not a...
So why does it matter if you do know whether you have, whether it's a bluff
Because
or
that's
not?
When you consciously know you're lying or not, and you're...
This is a conscious thing for you.
Sure it
this
is.
This is like something in the deep bowels...
You're not looking at your cards ever.
Deep bowels of your brain is what's considered a bluff.
Anything that makes you do the opposite of the value of your hand, if it's to mislead them and you have a terrible hand, it's a bluff. If you mislead them and you have a great hand, it's skill. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, right. but you're saying what legions of people before have said, and I'm blazing a new path.
Well, I know what you're saying, though. You're just saying the skill of the game means that there are no bluffs because it's your skill that made you bluff to win the pot. So I know what you're saying, so it's not really a bluff that way. Well, in the truest sense of the word, of course it's a bluff. I mean, of course there's always a bluff because you're lying. You're essentially lying when you don't have a hand. Regardless of how you bet and how skillful you did it, you're still lying. So it's a bluff, man. It's a bluff. If there is, I wish there was no bluff because then there'd be no Bluff Magazine. And we'd be reaping the benefits of the unfound readers who need someone else to read on the can.
Excellent. All right, well, I can't remember any bluffs last night in the free roll for apes.
It was last night?
It was last night, yeah. I'm guessing you didn't make it.
I didn't even know. I was so tired from our trip.
But here's the thing. I know, there's still a lot of free roll haters out there, but I don't know what the format will be like it was last night, but I was pleasantly surprised. I was late getting to there from dinner, but I sat down, and I had about 2,800 in chips. So apparently they started us with 3,000.
Wow.
But, so I immediately know the groan's going after the ANEF Nation now. So, I wanted to finish, March 7th.
So it was a late night.
I bowed out in the 30s. There were 414 entrants. I bowed out in the 30s, less than 2 hours into this thing.
Huh.
So the accelerated blind structure or something like that. So I know some people, hey, I want value for my money. Obviously, it's a free roll. But if you're one of these people that said, you know, I'm not going to spend 14 hours playing a free roll, they must have made some kind of tweaks to it that ensures that that's not.
That's good. Well, that's not too bad. It's not too much to ask to play 4 hours for some fun with the ANEF Nation and win a seat. So, but the seat that you're winning to would be February 10th, 9 p.m., stud. Of course, it's our first Apes event of the new season 5. Very exciting. And you can get any information about it on our website, ANEFmagazine.com. So, pretty exciting stuff, man. Apes is starting again. More bananas, More bananas, more stuff, more events. Very good. But I want you to pick up your paper and start reading from your ANEF news desk file.
Heads Up Entertainment International has announced that it will launch the Canadian Poker Player Television Network on the Internet on March 5th. The network will include footage from Canadian poker events that the company has previously shot and will shoot.
That's a lot of words.
It's a lot of Canadian words, yes.
Canadian Poker Player Television Network, the CPPTN.
CPPTN.
That's a lot to say, man. Wow. Well, something close to home here, very exciting. Six poker rooms in Florida have combined to create the Florida Million. It's a unique tournament format that could generate a prize pool of $1 million. Players can enter day one in any of the six rooms, with a top percent of each one of those events advancing to the championship days 2 and 3 at Derby Lane in St. Petersburg, Florida. First time anyone could possibly be playing for $1 million prize pool in this state where it's got horrible, horrible rules and bylaws and buy-ins and whatever.
Yeah.
Bipolars.
Bicuspids.
Okay, bicycles. so what do you think about that? It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our listeners outside of Florida are probably wondering why this is here, but as you said, with the laws, until they change down here, we're limited on tournament buy-ins and stuff, so this is kind of a creative way, I wouldn't say around it, makes it sound sneaky, it's a legitimate way of doing it, but it takes a lot of cooperation from us.
And that's not easy down here.
Yeah.
It's not easy, so we're, hats off to them.
And then finally, police in Grand Rapids, Michigan, last week raided a poker game being held in a hotel ballroom, arresting 20 people, including 4 women who were topless, Chris.
Huh.
The heavily advertised event included dealers who took their clothes off and did other stunts, like jello shots, for tips. I got to think, they had some quotes from the organizer of this thing, and I just have to imagine what went through this gentleman's, this entrepreneur's mind, when he said, you know what, hey, poker's not legal in our state, but I just rent out the little ballroom down there. We'll play a lot of poker, that's not illegal, much, and, you know, just in case it's not a big enough draw, let's hire all the strippers from the scuttlebutt down the street and have them come and take their clothes off. I'm sure law enforcement will have absolutely no problem with this.
This just in, the next event will have free drugs, lap dances, and kiddie porn. I mean, good God, man, what was this guy thinking? Oh, man, that's hilarious.
Crazy.
Okay, so we got a hotline ringing here in the studio. Got to answer it, but I don't know who's calling us right now, but it's 813-448-1120. Use that number. Leave a message. Scott will give you something cool off our swag shelf. This one comes from Jason in Reno.
Yes, hi, guys. This is Jason in Reno, a.k.a. Sports Fanatic. Silver medalist in the HTOC that commenced last night. And even though I won two out of the four tournaments, the point system got me. So my hat's off to Rasconi, the HTOC winner. But don't think that I'm not using this as motivation to try to win all the gold next year, because I did win two out of the four tournaments. But, hey, point system are what they are, so no worries. Anyway, guys, great show, and I'll look forward to the next tape series.
Oh, good call. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge for the listeners that did miss this that Chris said, I don't know who's calling, but then immediately knew who was calling.
No, I meant there's another line ringing. I didn't mean it was him.
Oh, okay.
This is the first line that we were having. Oh, gotcha. Someone else is calling. I don't know who that was, but Jason from Reno is here.
So somebody else is calling for next week. So we better have a hotline for next week now to make this bluff work.
There is no bluffing in any up. It's all skill.
Well, Jason, thanks for the call, and appreciation to everyone who put together this year's Tournament of Champions. I think Snuffy did a lot of work with it. But yeah, it turned out a good event. Glad everybody had fun. And, you know, I posted on the forum, I didn't play, and I don't know what you think about this, Chris, but, you know, I gave those little Matrix things a try when they came out.
Yeah, I remember
but,
that.
But to me, poker, you got to focus on one game at a time. To me, to be true poker. So I guess that's why I didn't play, because I didn't want to be trying to analyze four different tables at the same time.
So, you know, multi-table ever then?
No. I am intellectually incapable of multi-tabling, is what I'm saying.
You're a one-mealer and a one-tabler.
Exactly,
that's what you are.
Exactly.
Eat one meal a day, you play one game at a time.
Yeah. You know, when the jockey puts his blinders on me, I'm like, nope, don't need them. I'm not capable of looking over at the grass or anything. I'm going
tunnel vision, baby. Tunnel vision. I was just thankful that we didn't put the tournament together, so if anyone bitched or complained, we wouldn't have to worry about it. I was just happy that everyone played, and we didn't have to suffer any repercussions if anybody was unhappy. That made me feel pretty good.
All right, Jason, in addition to your second place finish there, we will send you a $10 staking package from getastake.com. And remember, again, folks, so you can call 813-448-1120 or email podcast@nmagazine.com and win any of our wonderful swag items.
We have a mailbag here from Brandon Tedesca. You know, in Italian, Tedesco
I
means
love that
German.
Name. Brandon Tedesca.
Tedesco means
you
German.
You should probably work that into your next novel, you know, when Will Hopper dies off.
See what I can do. But why don't you read it, because I have stuff to say about it. So I want you to read, then I can talk about
it. Excellent, because I don't have anything to say
about
it.
Okay, good.
All right, Brandon writes in. He says, before he played a game of poker, I had been playing the game Magic the Gathering. I've had some decent success with Magic, but never really put the time into learning the matchups and such. A number of poker players have originated in Magic, some with only mild success on the Magic scene, such as David Williams, of course. While nowhere on earth would I be considered a good poker player, come on, Brandon, you might play against me, I might be able to consider me. Don't sell yourself short, buddy. There are, however, many successful players that come from from Magic. I was curious on your take of the card game. Is it simply thought of as Dungeons & Dragons, or is it thought of as a breeding ground for poker players?
Well, I remember watching my stepsons play this game. Yeah. I didn't play it, so I don't have any firsthand knowledge of it. But there was a lot of deception, like where you positioned your cards and who, you know, you knew that, like, once you get to, especially when you know your opponents, just like in poker, when you know your opponents, you know the guy likes to put the whole card, you know, in other words, sometimes they had these traps that they would set, like if someone would pick that card, they'd turn it over and it would be a hole that they fell in, or, you know, and your character would die or lose points or whatever. And so you tend to know their tendencies about, okay, I know this guy that I'm playing now likes to put the Saber of Life over there, you know, whatever the hell these terms are, you know.
That sounds pretty cool. I want a Saber of Life.
But I don't know what they're called, but I do think that this game definitely is a breeding, because not only is it, you know, just like you were saying before, you don't play cards, you're playing the people. If you can get an idea of how this person plays and what his goal is in this game, you do the opposite to help him, to hurt his chances of achieving that goal. I do think it is a breeding ground for poker players, and I don't think of it as like Dungeons and Dragons. Those are the guys who listen to our show. You know, I don't know if they're the ones who play Magic, but Dungeons and Dragons is a little different. You roll the dice or a cube, and you know, and I'll let you be the half-dwarf Elrond and all this stuff, you know what I mean? So, but Magic definitely had characters and stuff, but it was mostly the cards that you were dealt, and I definitely think Magic is a stepping ground, like a minor league to poker, and it's a natural progression, because then, as you get older, too, you look for more exciting things and things you can do with your money, whereas in Magic, it's more of a kid's thing, and you're not really into that. You're not really playing for money.
Now, I imagine some hardcore Magic players out there dropping some...
drop some coin.
Bins in the back alley, right?
Yeah. I definitely think that somebody could gamble on it, obviously, but for the most part, the tournaments and things like that, you get to know their tendencies, and that's the same thing you do with poker. And it's a lot of heads-up play. It's all heads-up, so... That make you great for a poker player, especially when you make a final table. So
excellent.
I think it's a great letter. That's cool. That's good to think about.
All right. Well, we'll be happy to send you a deck of J Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Annie Up. You can put them right next to your deck of Magic the Gathering cards, Brandon, and use them to become that great poker player that you claim that you are not yet.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery. The Case of the Missing Linebacker. It's our semi-usual ritual of playing the Daily Guarantee Tournament, and we are just 20 minutes in. We're on the button this hand, fold, fold, a limper, fold, 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 and we look down at 7 of clubs, 7 of spades. Coincidentally, I just saw a video on our recent DeepStacks site guests where they played a 7-7 in middle position or late position DeepStack, where Mike advocated simply limping along. And, coincidentally, that's exactly what we do. The small blind completes, the big blind checks, and we see a flop. Flop is 4 diamonds, jack of clubs, 9 of hearts. Check, 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 and it comes around to me. And even though no one's made a play at this, I'm going to check. I was set mining, and I didn't get a set. And it's going to be very, very typical for the jack to check raise me here. The river brings the 7 of hearts, and suddenly the landscape changes. Our small blind suddenly bets 200. Our big blind folds. Our early position limper calls. And I decide that, it's time to shut this down. I raise it up to 1,000. And our small blind folds, obviously just taking a stab at it, but our last remaining opponent calls.
I know you're busy, and I took up enough of your time already. Just one more thing.
When the river comes in 8 of diamonds, he shoves his remaining 1,100, and we're left to contemplate whether we're willing to go broke here.
No need to rush, sir.
So what do you think? Is this a good time for a hero call?
Remember, Sven, our friendly poker stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that poker stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our poker stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Wow, we are back from Jacksonville, and what a ride, too. I mean, it wasn't too bad this time. I remember the last time we went to Ebro, so that was a little further away.
Yeah,
but
that's quite a bit longer.
We drove to Jacksonville to be the hosts of the first ever land-based poker tournament in Florida that's going to be on television. So it was pretty exciting, pretty good stuff.
Groundbreakers.
And of course, we're trailblazers, man. Just like you with your bluff little thing there. We're blazing a trail for Florida poker again. And hopefully for Southeast poker with this sort of movement. And we had a listener, Kirk Fala, who's in charge of the Windy City Poker Championships, who had us on TV up there too, and part of his charity stuff, come down and run the set and run the show, and very impressive stuff. I really enjoyed myself up there.
Yeah, we had a fairly easy drive up there, and we got up there, and they were already into this tournament. About 60 some players left, I think, when we got there. But that's Russo was still alive. Chad Brown had got booted out of his own tournament
very early, day one.
The first thing I thought was kind of interesting was we got there and like, wow, they're already down to 63. Now, this is like noon on Sunday, right?
Mm.
They had probably another 12 more hours to get down to the TV table of 6, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I got to get out of here early tonight. We left at close with 14 players still left, I think. Yeah. 13, 14, something like that?
Well, I think the next morning we got there.
About a dozen.
It was about a dozen or so. But yeah, but amazing. They didn't get to the final table.
So they had to start the play a little early the next day to try to speed it up the process. We didn't get to the TV table, Chris, the final six, until after 5 p.m.
Yeah, the next day.
So
it's crazy.
I wonder whether you think, you know, because we're watching some of these players too. I wonder if people, whether we had two bubbles. Obviously, we had two bubbles in this, but whether the second bubble was the biggest bubble for the folks here. When you get down to the top 24 and you made the money, that was the first bubble. But I think people really wanted to be on TV.
Yeah, and that's why
the play got really slowed down.
Yep. They were hoping people to get knocked out. They were thinking long and hard about their decisions. Do I really want to commit as many chips because it could cripple me and I won't make it on television? That's a good point. I think people really wanted to be on TV. Though I don't think I was there for when it finally got to seven. Because they were going to make it six, but they were like, we got to get a table going. So when it got to seven, they went to the final table. I remember the clapping and stuff, but I don't remember actually seeing the guy go out and the remorse on his face or anything. But yeah, that's a good point. They definitely slowed down when it got after the first money bubble.
But definitely kudos to our new good friend Kirk Falla and the Falla Productions crew. All the folks that are up in Chicago and seeing him work, they know exactly what he can do. But it was great to bring him and his staff down to Florida. And I tell you, watching them set up the room and stuff, to me, that was one of the coolest things on the first day is, because the tournament was going on in the normal poker room and they were spending some time in the normal tournament room, which is where the TV was, setting it all up. It is not as easy as proud mama and proud papa whipping out the little flip cam and shooting Junior making his first couple steps. I mean, no, there's a lot of stuff that goes involved.
It's a lot, and it takes a lot of people, not just to set up the stuff, but then once it's set up, you got to have people sitting in the chairs to see how the lighting is going. I mean, there was that one instance where we were sitting in and you could see the shadow of like the boom mic hitting people in the face. So then they had to put these gels over the lights to calm the light down so it would be a softer light that wouldn't make a harsh shadow. And just all this stuff, that all the knowledge they have. And, Kirk's done a really good job with his staff because these are former students of his that he taught. And now they're working together in a company. So it came together really nice and very cool. And it was weird, too, because you had to have the state involved. And by the state, I mean, the pari-mutuel people or whatever that come in right. And make sure that the cameras that are in the ceiling are still aiming correctly at the dealer so there's no cheating and at the table and all this other stuff. And then they have to make sure everything else gets put back properly because they had to move a bunch of stuff around to have this isolated table in the tournament room and just a lot to get it done. And we did it. It's done. You know, it was pretty incredible. We even had that green screen upstairs to do some interviews.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Like a trampoline turned on its side, yeah. And we did that so that they could put stuff behind us. Scott wants to have like the Grand Canyon behind him, and he's like flying, through
the
Grand Canyon.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, use that footage, man. Put me, I can't fly to the pyramids in Egypt now, but throw the little behind me on the blue screen, and I'm gonna say, I was in Europe or Egypt or wherever the pyramids are.
So they did a bunch of interviews up there with the final table players and some of the other players. And, of course, they interviewed Chad Brown. We talked to him a little bit. And he found out while he was up there, they're naming a dog after him.
He's getting his own greyhound.
They gave him Downtown Chad Brown. That's pretty hilarious, man.
I'm going to wait. I'm going to try to figure out when they name him because they simulcast that everywhere. And I'm going to put down $2 on Downtown Chad Brown. I think he can go the distance.
And he's headed downtown. That's Downtown Chad Brown around the corner.
I was trying really hard to get named after the rabbit named Danny up, but they don't seem to be budging off of Rusty.
Well, here's the thing. They don't ever call out the rabbit's name during the race, so we wouldn't get any branding or any advertising.
That's not sure at the beginning. They're like, here comes Rusty.
Here comes Danny up.
Yeah, see, exactly. It would work.
Oh, man, that'd be hilarious.
And they could say the official Greyhound Rabbit of Antioch Magazine or something like that. Anything's possible. But no, I guess you got to be a big pro that they put your name on the show in order to get the tournament to get your own.
I think we could pull a few strings, maybe make it happen.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
All right, we'll see.
Well, you brought up that when we got there, that Vanessa Russo was still alive in the tournament, but what you didn't bring up was my open mouth insert foot moment with Vanessa Russo. I feel terrible.
Actually, you probably forgot the first one. We get there, and of course, we bring our beautiful ante up sign
right.
that we put up. And, right. Vanessa, the cover that Vanessa was on is the one that you chose many months ago to highlight prominently on the sign. So, hey, you know.
Worked out well.
Worked out great. So we set it up literally about 6 inches from Vanessa at the tournament, right? And
she gets knocked out.
Then she gets knocked out pretty soon. So it's kind of like that that thing that Peter found, the idol that Peter found on Brady Bunch.
But they told us to put the sign there. We didn't just say, hey, let's put it right next to her. They said, why don't you put it right there? And I was like, all right. But here's the deal. I go over, I'm talking to Kirk at the other end about some of the production stuff of the poker room. I start walking down the poker room, and I see Scott and a couple of the managers there, and they're talking to Vanessa. And as I'm walking up, they're all smiling, you know? So I'm like, oh, okay, so they're probably just, you know, shooting the breeze, you know, whatever. So I walk up to her. I had seen her at Daytona a little while ago, and at the end of her camp, she told everyone there, and she's like, I really love these sort of riddles and things, and if anybody, I've never, ever not solved a riddle that anyone's ever given me. So if anybody has any, let me know. So after I interviewed her, I told her two riddles and said, you know, let me know if you ever solve them. Well, I mean, it's months later, and I never heard from her, so I figured she didn't solve them. So I walk up to her, and I'm like, hey, and she looks at me, and she's like, hey, and I'm like, hey, did you ever solve those riddles? And she's like, dude, I just got knocked out. I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm like, oh, my God. I felt so bad. I had no idea. You guys could have given me a heads up or something.
We were chuckling on the inside.
Oh, man. I felt
just watched
so bad.
Ace-King didn't catch up to the two pairs and she's up. She stood up, and she's like, oh, I just hate getting knocked out. Oh, I'm just so frustrated. And then we're all kind of backing off, getting Leonard's beam, and here comes Chris, just bounding down the runway. Yo, Nessa!
Remember? Nessa.
I'm CC! How about the riddles?
Man, you aren't even close. You aren't even close. But, well, we had a lot of fun with her afterward after I saw her, and she was like, no, dude, I'm not upset. I didn't even, you know, don't worry about it, blah, blah, blah. So then she's like, I really do want to solve these riddles. So we sat there, and she tried to solve that riddle all night and never solved it. And then this morning, at 2:45 a.m., I get a text from her, and she solved the riddle.
Did she?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Which really sucks for us,
yes.
Because we said if she didn't solve it in time for the first day of the World Series, she had to wear our patch. And so I texted her back and saying, yeah, congrats, I'm happy for you, but it would have been nicer to see the patch on you. But she finally solved it. We had a lot of fun with her, too. She was going crazy. She just could not figure it out, and you know, we were just laughing at her, and it was a good time.
Now, here's the thing. Why don't you tell the folks the riddle, not the solution? And Annie Up will put up a piece of swag for the first person to email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com or calls the hotline.
Yeah, the first person that contacts us, basically.
First person to contact us, we will send, with the correct answer, we will send whatever
something.
Kind of crap I find.
Something.
<in the office.
laughs> All right, so the riddle, when I was in journalism school, the first day of journalism class, one of my professors wrote this on the chalkboard. He said, I want somebody in this room to pronounce this word. And the word was spelled G as in George, H as in heaven, O as in Othello, T as in Tom, I as in internet, G-H-O-T-I. He said, I want you to pronounce this word. And that's all he said. I'm not going to give you another clue. I gave her a bunch of clues, and she still didn't get it for what amounted to be like 3 days.
Well, I thought there was another key clue that you...
Well, no, I just added that to help her. That's not... I didn't get any of that help. And
okay.
Since we're giving something away instead
that's
of getting
true.
Something
All
for
right,
it,
that's true.
I'm not giving them an extra clue. But
all right, so you just got to pronounce G-H-O-T-I.
G-H-O-T-I. What word does that spell? And the first person who gets it right will get something from us. We don't know what it is yet, but...
You know what? Here's the thing. It's not going to be contact, because you got to pronounce it, right?
Yeah.
So it's got to be auto. Audio. So,
I get. Oh, yeah, that'd be kind of funny if people start sending us all these audio clips. You see what
right,
they say?
No, you're going to call the hotline, 813-448-1120. That's the only way.
Yeah, no emails.
The only way you're going to win.
All right. We're adjusting on the fly here.
Exactly.
No
exactly.
Emails. Figure out the... God. All right.
But Chad and Vanessa did a good job hosting that. They were very...
gracious.
...good at the time. Yes, gracious.
Very gracious.
And took a lot of pictures with folks.
Had a lot of fun with them. And you know, we're going to get into some of the other fun stuff that happened to us while we were there. But let's talk about the hotel. We can't say the name of the hotel because they were nice to us and whatever. But man, I gotta tell you, man, let's figure out each individual aspect of this hotel room, okay? Because for me, I felt like you need to be John Nash from A Beautiful Mind to crack the code on how to turn on the bathroom light, dude. It was like, there were like these two switches. If you turned one on, the light over the vanity turned on. If you turned it off, the fan went on in the bathroom. If you turned the bottom one on, the light went on in the bathroom, but the fan turned off. It was literally like, you know, freaking, remember that game,
like
Simon?
Jews.
You had to remember the combinations. I mean, it was driving me crazy. It was absolutely insane. You know, and speaking of that bathroom, the actual bathroom part where the shower was, you had to step out of the bathroom to change your mind. That's how small this bathroom was. I could not believe it. I mean, literally, if you sat down, I don't even want to get into sitting down in this room, okay? You don't want to sit down on the toilet. You have nowhere to put your legs. It was ridiculous. It was unbelievable how small it was. And then the shower head. Okay, the shower head had to be installed by Bilbo Baggins. All right, because only a hobbit, Vern Troyer, and Scott Long could stand underneath this shower head. This thing on a 90 degree smacked me right in the chin. Okay, I there's nothing I could do. I had to like crouch down to get underneath the shower head to get any water on my hair. I mean, it was unbelievable. How did you take a shower in there?
You know, people used to be short, you know, until basketball was invented. Now people are all taller.
Oh, man, it was unreal. I mean, this thing came out of the middle of the wall and hit you right dead square in the sternum. It was unbelievable. Oh, man, what a bathroom. Unbelievable. So we got to playing a little bit. We played a little bit.
That's right.
And first night, I got my aces cracked and I lost a rack. And so then I won some of it back, but then I lost it again. So that sucked, and you didn't have a good first night either. We both were sort of commiserating. Yep. Yeah. So the second day, we had a bunch of meetings, and I was like, you know what? There's a lot of time between now and the TV table. I'm going to play again, try to get that money back. And I did. I ended up winning my money back. But there was this one hand I wanted to bring up for the nation just to hear about it, and then I'll lead into some of our other things. I had 10-7 of spades, and I was on the button. And a guy raised under the gun $10, and it was a 2-2 table, 2-2 no limit. They don't have 1-2 no limit up there. They have 2-2 no limit. Not sure what that reasoning is. I guess it plays bigger, maybe. I don't know. And so when he raised to 10, he had 4 or 5 callers, and I'm on the button. And I'm like, you know what, $10, I want to try to stack somebody here. So I call the 10, and maybe the blinds called or folded, I don't know. So I have 10-7 of spades. Flop comes 8 of spades, 9 of spades, jack of clubs. Okay. I have essentially the absolute nuts plus an open-ended straight flush redraw, right? So the under-the-gun guy bets, and he bet like a minuscule amount, like 10 again, which is ridiculous. But he bet like 10 or 15. Another guy goes all in, and it's for 50. And I'm like, tastes good. Tastes like chicken. I'm going to get some money here. Folds around to me. And at this point, I only had like, this was before I went on my run. This was the start of my rush. So I only had like $65 left. So I put it all in. I should have probably just called, but I put it all in because it's only $15 more. And I wanted to at least isolate in case somebody was on a higher flush draw than me or whatever. So anyway, I get it all in. Now, the guy who originally raises and who originally bets takes a while. And he's like, his hands are shaking. And I'm like, all right, so this guy's got aces or kings or something. This guy, you got to be. So he grabs $50. He's got it in his hand. And he says, all right. And he moves forward with it. And the exact same time he's saying, all right, and he's moving forward. As his hand's about to place the chips down on the betting line, the dealer reaches out and grabs his hand and says, now, wait a minute, it's 65 over there. Now, that's me. The dealer makes him stop making his bet and making his call. You know, he already did make his call because verbal's binding, I thought. The guy says, oh. So now, I don't know if the dealer said to him, it's 65, and the guy thought it was 65 on top of the 50, or if he thought it was just 65 and 15 more dollars. So if the guy's going to call 50, he's going to call 65, right? I thought. He puts his chips down and mucks, and they let him muck. Now, is that right or is that wrong, Scott?
Because it screwed you, that is perfectly right. Anything, the new laws talk to Mr. Hoyle. And the new edition of the book coming out. And anything that screws Chris Cosenza is legal.
Fine, it's legal. But
had it been me, no, that's terrible. Absolutely
okay,
brutal.
Good. It's terrible. But of course, we were there as sort of guests, you know, we had our shirts on and stuff. And the last thing you want to do is be an ass at the table when you're representing your company.
Yeah, I mean, you're an ass everywhere else. So I mean, you can take a break.
You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so
right.
I said, you know what? I'm not going to say anything, but you did call. I mean, it's a call, and I should have 65 more bucks here. The other guy turned over 9 of spades, 2 of spades. So he called a raise with 9 deuce of spades. and he was drawn dead. He had a pair of nines, and actually he wasn't drawn dead because he turned two pair on the turn. On the river, I could have lost him with a nine or a deuce fell, but I ended up, or no, it wasn't nine deuce. I don't know what it was. It was something like that. He had like a smaller flush draw or a seven or whatever, jack. I don't know what it was, but he had a smaller flush draw and didn't get there and ended up making two pair, but that was it. And so I won the money, and I was cool about it. I mean, I basically went on a run after that and won a bunch of money and whatever. But I just couldn't believe it. That verbal isn't binding universally? How could that not be? I thought verbal was binding everywhere, regardless of state laws and all this other stuff. But so then later on, we hooked up with a couple of the dealers and at the sports lounge next door where we were staying in a hotel. And we asked them, and one dealer said it's a call, and the other dealer said it wasn't. So I'm like, where's the vindication, baby? I mean, everybody, you know, if they don't say call, it's not a call at our place. And I'm like, no way. But it wasn't. It wasn't a call, and I didn't get my money.
Yeah, I mean, I would have been interested in what the floor would have said had you been in a position that it would have made sense to
call him.
To call the floor.
Yeah, and I'm probably going to get a bunch of guff over it.
Because I could see the thing where it says call. Because I've seen a lot of rulings lately where people come over. What exactly did he say, the floor says to the dealer? And often if it's not call or raise or fold, you know, one of the big words, then sometimes they'll rule against it because of that. So.
And I see that happen. But I also, when it's combined with the forward motion,
of the movement,
the chips in the hand, and the dealer interfering with his oak, you won't stop him from doing anything. Whatever he wants to do, he does. You don't stop him.
All right. You know, I tend
and it was clear. He said what the bet was before.
I tend to agree with you, but I also think the dealer needs to run the game properly and make sure that problems are solved before they become problems. Now, this particular example is a little extreme, I think, but obviously what happened here is the dealer either did not fully announce your raise so the entire table could hear it, or this gentleman didn't hear the dealer fully announce the raise. And she was probably trying to...
It was a guy.
Guy, well, you know.
And he did do all those things. And he said how much it was to the guy. And the guy had a handful of chips in his hand. And you don't know how much he had. It could have been 65. It could have been 50. I don't know. But it looked like it was 50. But the dealer stopped him. He didn't announce how much he was calling or anything. He just said, all right, and was moving forward with the money. The dealer touches his hand and stops him. That's a no-no to me. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to stop someone from making a mistake. So anyway, it doesn't matter. It all worked out good. I got my money back and paid for the flat tire that I had when I got up there. I had to change the tire out because we almost died on the highway. But other than that, I'm fine with it. But when we went to the sports bar, I walk in and Scott's like, hey, let's go to the bar and get some drink. I said, all right. And I said, Scott, look, it's past Blue Ribbon in a can. He was ecstatic. Ecstatic. How many did you have?
I don't know. You lose track after
one. Yeah, at least two, right?
I added enough to quench my thirst. That's all that's important.
Also, you had 12. I got to tell you, though, you don't want to be within earshot of Scott an hour after having these Pabst Blue Ribbons. This man, when he goes and relieves the rental of the Pabst Blue Ribbon, it was like the scene from Austin Powers when he wakes up from the hypersleep. It's like you got the prostate of Doyle Brunson, man. I don't know how you do it, but it was incredible, man. I can't keep that much in me. I'd have to go like five times the amount of times that you went once. It was incredible. You know how they have those Kobayashi power eaters where they've trained years and years to fit all that food in there? I can see where all that drinking has finally paid off for you, man. You must have a bladder that's like yay big. It was incredible, man. Hats off to you, buddy. That was just the most amazing, man. The most amazing thing ever. I couldn't sleep. You know why I couldn't sleep? Because the damn TV in the hotel room didn't work. You turn it on, it went mute after like 2 minutes.
Well, I have a theory that it went mute because you were unnecessarily denigrating one of the classic movies in American cinema, Independence Day. You could have just kept quiet.
It was punishing me, right?
Instead of just sitting there and let me enjoy the moment, tears streaming down my eyes, you got to say, no, this movie sucks. And it doesn't suck. It is a great movie. And I think the TV paid you back by, in the middle of your movie, cutting out the sound. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Karma's a bitch, baby.
Yeah, it sucked, man. And I didn't care about watching the movie. I wanted to drown out your snoring. And I couldn't do it without any volume on the TV.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You're not absent from culpability.
I know.
In the snoring arts department on this trip.
But you always fall asleep before me, so you would never know until you wake up. I always can't fall asleep.
Abe Lincoln knocked on the door in the morning and said, "Yo, dude, man, you gotta shut Chris up, man." I'm not going to... there's not going to be enough logs for the Lincoln logs here if he keeps sawing the way he's sawing.
Oh, man, that's hilarious. But I have to say, my favorite part of the trip was we went home. On our way back, we stopped at Ocala High Line, and it was a quiet day. They didn't have any actual highlight going on, just poker and some simulcasting. And I said to Sue, who helps run the room up there with her husband, Pat, I said, hey, can we go down and throw the pelota around? She's like, sure. I'm like, all right. So we go out there, and we actually put the helmet on,
yeah,
and we put the Cestas.
Helmets, and we had Cestas, and we didn't have a pelota, though.
We didn't have a pelota,
probably
but,
for the best.
But we did have a blue stress rubber ball that we threw around. And when I say threw around, I mean Scott threw it around his body and behind him and to the left. He couldn't hit the wall to save his life.
It's not an easy game.
It's not an easy game. I've been telling him for years it's not easy, and he finally found out firsthand. But we had a lot of fun with it. And took pictures and stuff. And we're going to... You put them on your Facebook page, right?
Yep. They're up on the NEF Facebook page. So you can check them out
And
there.
Then we'll probably run one or two in the magazine. So that was the best part of the trip for me. I mean, overall, it was a great trip. We met a lot of great people. We learned a lot of new things. And got one under our belt. Did a little historical stuff. And but really, playing highlight was just... was awesome. Reliving our youth. You know what I mean? That was pretty cool.
Absolutely great. Absolutely great. And I am... going to be working on becoming a professional highlight watcher.
Highlight watcher, absolutely. Professional highlight better.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
This is Downtown Chad Brown, and I'm in the studio with Auntie Up.
Getting hands of the week from the expansion area already, Chris.
Awesome.
All the way from Hammond, Louisiana.
Cool.
Comes from our new friend, Joe Morris. He's all excited for the magazine there and been listening to the show. He also wanted me to point out that Fasto's attempt at a Southern accent was hysterical.
That doubly pisses off Fasto because he hates me when I used to use hysterical. I've stopped using hysterical because of him.
Yes, that's right.
And, of course, now his accent.
Of course, he would say, oh, this is hysterical. That's how Fasto would say it.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible.
Of course, then Joe goes on to pick on me for how I pronounce Biloxi.
It's Biloxi.
Yeah. Well, he says Biloxi, not Biloxi.
Yeah, it's Biloxi.
Yeah, I thought I said that.
I don't know.
Biloxi.
It's Biloxi.
Say Biloxi. Biloxi. Yeah, Biloxi. If I say Biloxi, am I saying it correct?
You're saying it right now.
So did I used to say Biloxi?
I think so.
All right. Well,
but
Joe thinks it's because I did. All right.
You were the one that couldn't pronounce cow. Or what was that word you couldn't pronounce when you saw him in the
bull.
Bull. So I don't know. Maybe you were saying Biloxi. I don't know. But I always say Biloxi. I don't know if it's right or not either. So I'm just
according to Joe, it is.
It is Biloxi. Okay, cool.
All right, but anyhow, we got a hand here, I guess, at some point.
Yeah, let's get moving on this. It's getting late.
All right, it looks like this is a home game where they play. It's they play a couple tournaments a night. He says these are real amateurs, in parentheses, like me. So you know, he puts himself in that group. He's not overselling his skills here, like players like that.
You got to be in touch with your feelings, man.
Exactly. He says he's even had players bring a laminated poker hand card to the table.
Huh.
I like that, too. You know, people keep his track. So anyhow, it's not a serious game. Buy-in's only $10, and they pay out the top three when they have nine players.
Okay.
And he says, $60 to a college professor is like $10,000 to you guys. Joe, I don't really think so.
I don't think so, either.
I've seen college professors.
I wish I made college professor money.
All right, here we go. Here's Dan. It's early in the second tournament. Blinds are still at the starting amount of $5, $10. Most players still have around $1,000 in tournament chips. But we're down to eight-handed. One player's already gone. Our hero is on the button and is dealt the ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds.
Wow, they've already lost a player in its first level. And they've got 1,000 units and it's only...
It's probably the player that didn't have the laminated poker hand card.
Holy cow. All right.
All right, first two players fold. Under the gun, plus three calls. Next player, who he'd like us to call Mike, makes a min raise to 10. Cutoff gets out of the way, and now it's on us with our ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds. What would you do, Mike Matusow?
Well, I think the min raise is terrible. unless he's got a monster. So I'm going to, and even then, you probably want to thin the field. So I'll probably raise for information here, try to get out the blinds, and because if I just call, then it's proper odds for the big blind to call.
That's
so
right.
I'm thinking I'll probably raise again. Since he made it 20 to go, I'll probably make it 60. I got 1,000 in front of me. I'd make it 60 to go, at least.
All right, because we normally would make it 3X, and there's got a couple callers you added in there, so it's about 50-60, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, our hero bumps it to 1,000. Oh, I'm sorry.
1,000. He's all in.
Hands over.
Let's go. We'll see you at the tables.
Well, that would be hysterical. No, he raises it $100. Sorry, 100 units. He wants to take the pot down right then. And he says he's excessively taken down pots, several pots earlier in the evening doing this.
All right, so he has a history with these players. He has a history with them that night. He knows what will work and what won't work. So if he feels like 100 will work, that's fine. I'm not sure I'm ecstatic about committing a 10% of my stack on a raise when I don't even have a hand yet. And I don't know what this guy has. But all right, whatever. 100's fine. I still bet 50 or 60. But okay, well, let's say it's okay.
All right. Let's say it's okay.
I'm trying to be positive. It's my new positive outlook.
Yeah, you know, it's probably better than just limping.
Oh, it's absolutely better than just calling this guy's min raise or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so he gets the blinds out. He gets the first caller out. Action is on. Mike, who calls? All right, so we got our desired effect.
Yeah,
we're heads up.
Yeah, we're heads up. There's about probably 260 in the pot or so. We're happy with that.
All right, the flop is the ace of clubs, six of diamonds, three of spades.
Well, I mean, other than two pair or a set, we got, or trips, we got to be pretty happy with this flop for us, and we're in position, so we can control the size of the pot. Let's see what happens.
Mike, our lone opponent here, bets out 50 units.
Wow.
Doesn't respect our raise, pre-flop, bets right into us.
Huh. So, I mean, it seems like he has an ace, at least one ace in his hand, right? I mean, could be an ace-king, you know, and he's slow playing it, maybe, just don't want to get stringy along. Or it could be kings, and he's trying to see if you're going to come over the top, you know, or something like that. Kings or jacks, or, you know, but he didn't raise a lot. Do you think he'd have a hand like, see, we would have a hand like suited connectors or something.
That's right.
I don't know what this guy would have. So it seems like he has an ace in his hand, and he's not afraid to bet a little amount into a big pot. So,
well, I tell you, it's a real peculiar bet, because if you had a monster, this is not a board that scares me.
Yeah, no.
You know, if I have to give a free card, I'm not really worried about it. Particularly since I have a player that raised me big on the flop, I'm reasonably sure he's going to bet.
Yeah.
And if I want to check raise or something, I can do that.
Yeah.
And if I fail on that, if it's check behind, it's really not that big of a deal.
So you're saying you can't put this guy on a monster because of the way he bets?
Well, I guess I don't understand, regardless of what he has, why a $50 bet here.
Yeah.
If he's trying to bluff his arm a bit, $50 is not enough.
It's like a fifth of the pot.
Like, if he has a better hand than us, he'd probably extract more value by letting us bet.
I would, if I had a really good hand here, I would definitely check, because our hero here indicated strength, and an ace is what you would think he'd have. So when he hits the ace, if I've got a really big hand and you know this other guy's got an ace, well, there's a lot to be thought to said about that too. If he's a tricky player and he knows you have an ace and he has a better hand than an ace, then he would bet. You know what I mean? One of the rules of Super System was baby cards.
But 50 is a weird bet, isn't it?
And well,
we're looking at a pot of 200 plus some change.
Well, again, it's weird in conventional. In conventional thoughts, it's weird. In this home game where a guy's already out on the first level for 1,000 chips, I don't know what their level of thinking is. So maybe for him, he thinks it's a good bet. I don't know. But from our standpoint, it is a weird bet. It's real fishy. It's a fishy bet to me. It's either a bet where he's looking for information, or it's a bet where he doesn't want to lose us. So I'm thinking I have enough chips here where I can give him the information and find out. If he just calls me when I raise him, then I might be willing to let this hand go on the turn if I don't improve, or if he shows some serious strength after that. So I think I'm going to have to raise here. I can't just let him bet out and try to hit two pair for free.
You can't just let him take the lead here. You got to show him who's boss.
Yeah, I got to make it like 150, 160
All right.
and see what he does. And after that, depending on what he does, I'll make my adjustments later.
Okay. Our hero raises to 200, believing that he's ahead at this point. And Mike just calls.
Okay, this guy can't have a draw. There's no draw. He doesn't have 4-5. He didn't min raise with 4-5. He didn't min raise with 2-4. You know, he does not have a draw. So either this guy's got a set somehow, or he's got ace-king, and he's slow playing us. There's no... I mean, I don't know if he has a set of aces, because that's... If he has a set of aces, then this guy really is either really tricky or doesn't know what he's doing. But it feels like he could have sixes, you know, a set of sixes or something. Just that call. I mean, that call's got to scare you. What could he possibly be calling with now? If he bets out 50 as a feeler, you make it 4x that, and then he still calls? And you only have 1,000 in front of you, so if he's already called off 300 of his stack. He's almost at 50% of his stack for this hand. So he's got to have... He's got to have like ace king or a set of sixes or something.
Now again, we're thinking.
Or, I don't think it's a draw. Obviously,
we're thinking traditionally, which is good for the entire show.
Right.
You know, I could also see this being made by a beginning player with ace rag.
True. He could have ace six. Although, would he have min raised with
ace six?
Well,
I'm seeing ace six. I mean, I could see somebody making this move with ace five because I mean, we just got done teaching poker 101 a couple weeks ago. And, and even at the deep stacks course, we saw a bunch of people playing ace rag and thinking that it's great, and then they hit the ace and now they feel like they've, you know, flopped a royal.
And that's the other thing too, is I don't know if this player would do something like that min raise pre-flop.
Exactly. This would be something you'd have to be able
to really
assess.
Know the person.
Right.
But it feels like a set of sixes. And
but I'm with you, though. I think
but there's no draw here.
When we re-raise pre-flop and then somebody bets into us and then
calls our re-raise again.
That ace queen shrivels up.
Yeah.
Shrinkage.
I don't like my hand. Get out of the cold shower.
All right, here comes the turn. It is the eight of clubs. So we have the ace of clubs, six of diamonds, three of spades, eight of clubs.
That does nothing. That card might as well be a cocktail napkin. Because it does nothing. It completes nothing. It gives a flush draw out there, but there's no way someone was hanging around with two clubs hoping to hit runner-runner clubs.
Right.
So that card is a nothing card. If he does anything here, he's got a hand already, and we got to get away from this hand. Unless it's cheap enough where we can maybe see a showdown for a cheap price.
Right.
But
all right, so he checks.
The guy checks to us?
The guy checks.
Oh, I'm checking. I'm happy checking. I am happy checking there. I am happy checking. Let's check behind him. Come on, Joe. Check behind him.
Joe decides he wants to take control of the hand and bets out 100.
But he had control of the hand already. That's what he's doing. He's controlling the pot now. He is controlling the hand. Don't bet. Don't bet here. Check here.
That was a great little line from the deep stacks. Like, when you control the pot, you control your opponent.
Yeah, you control your opponent. He was controlling. If he checks there, he does control. And then he can see a showdown on the river for a much cheaper price.
Well, and here's the thing, too, is we've already almost decided completely that we're behind in this hand anyhow, right?
I think so.
So when he gives us that green light with a check, you know, I'm happy just to check and then hope maybe I hit another ace or a queen or something that makes me feel like I can call a smallish bet on the river. But if I get this down the showdown as cheaply as possible, I'm happy with that.
The other thing, too, is if this guy does have a big hand and he checks there, shows weakness, he might do something crazy on the river that, you know, like they do online where they shove. He might do something crazy like that where if he shoves, then you're looking at, you know, all right, do I have... Now you're put for your life on the line here to make this decision on the end. Or he bet $50 last street. Maybe he thought that was a good bet. Maybe he'll bet that again on the river, and you'll see it for less than what you just bet on the turn and see what he has and how he plays it. So I just can't see betting out here and opening the betting up again. Let him go on the river and see what happens there. And if he's got, you know, like ace-jack, and he's, you know, not bluffing because there's no bluffing in poker, but if he has ace-jack and we have a better hand, then we'll take it down for a cheap price and know how he plays. So don't open up the betting again on the turn there when you're skeptical of this guy calling your re-raises, you know?
Right.
Or your raises.
All right, so we bet out 100, and our villain Mike just calls.
Yeah, this is terrible. We can't have the best hand here.
Well, I mean, what would be worse is Mike raising us here, which is what we thought he would do. So yeah. I guess terrible is relative, but...
But again, if he's a crafty player, the 8, you know, if he has a real good hand, the 8 doesn't scare him either, so he can get away with just calling and trying to suck more out of our hero
here. That is true.
So the 8 does nothing in this hand, so unless he has aces and 8s and the other guy's got ace king. But, yeah, there's just no way. I can't bet here. I have to check and hopefully I get a good showdown for a cheap price.
All right. The river comes in blank. He doesn't remember what it was, but it had to be worse than a cocktail napkin because we don't even know what it was. But he did say it did not complete a straight or flush, so we can assume that it was a blank.
Be like a 7 or no?
Yeah.
I don't really imagine a card that can't complete a straight unless it's a king or something. That's not a
10 or something.
Not a blank,
right?
But
all right. But anyhow, it's a blank. We're going to sit here and argue about what it could be for the rest of the hand.
I can make a straight if it's a 10. So yeah, let's just say didn't complete any straights and flushes.
All right, Mike just decides now to take control here and bets out 200 into us.
Oh my God! So the guy bets 200 into us now?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So now if we didn't bet 100 on the last turn, he might have done that here, and it would have only cost us 100 on each street, theoretically.
Theoretically.
So, I'm not happy with the call there, with having to call this, but let's see. We have 200. That's a call. There was 100 on the turn. That was 200 in the pot. So, I mean, we're getting like, I don't know,
about five,
6 to 1 on the
winner. He's estimating the pot at about 1,100.
1,100. So, geez.
More than 5 to 1.
Geez. Well, you know what, though? It's a $10 buy-in. So, and you already lost one player. Maybe you can go over there, play that guy heads up, and win some money back. So let's just call. But the lesson here is that you should have checked the turn and maybe gotten the river for cheaper. You know, of course, if you know Lee Childs is here, he probably told us to play it totally differently, but we're not as smart as he is. So I'm going to call in the end and know I'm beat. How's that?
Yeah, this is a tricky little situation here because I do believe that I'm behind here. All right. Sometimes you have to make this call just in case you're wrong. 5 to 1, you know, you make it 5 times, you're right once, and it pays for it, right? So that's why you got to make the call, I guess.
I guess.
But, you know, again, if you know the player well enough and you're really convinced that you're behind, we probably could say the 200. Remember, we only start with 1,000 anyhow, so.
Did he call?
He actually moves all in.
Oh, no! Joe Morris, you have the same name as one of my favorite running backs in all of history, but you just got sacked on this one. There is no way you have the best hand here to do that with. There is no way, no way you have the best hand. I'm sorry, that's a bad play. You should be happy to just call at 200. And if you're ahead, you got a nice spot. If you're behind, then you have some chips left to try to rally later and double up and get back to your starting stack. There's no way I shove here. No way.
All right, what would you say if our villain calls and we take down this pot?
I'd be happy for us. I don't think it's true. But I'd be happy. I mean, I would think that'd be great. It would have to be if that happens. It would have to be ace jack. If we win this hand, the other person has ace jack. But I think the other person has a set of sixes.
All right. Well, our villain does call and tables pocket rockets.
Okay. Well, it's a set. Set of aces wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be. But wow, that's now if you live that hand back again, that's pretty wild with aces there. I mean, he wasn't afraid of anything. You know, I mean, he didn't have anything to be afraid of, so that it is particular with that $50 bet after he flopped a set of aces and he bets out. So he must have known this guy might have had the case ace, but that's a stretch there to bet. You're going to scare anybody off because you got the deck crippled there.
Because I kind of wanted to go back and think about this. I mean, when I was writing back to her the first time, a min raise preflop usually signifies, and you said this at the beginning of the hand, either a weakish type of bet or a monster just trying to build a little value.
No.
Not ever, but rarely do it either way. But that's so when you raise, he calls, flop comes with an ace, and he bats into you. Now you got to think that he has at least an ace or something that beats you here.
This is why I thought it was pocket sixes, because I thought maybe he was convinced our hero had ace king. And if you bet into somebody who has ace king and an ace high flop, they're going to, and they raised you pre flop, you bet into them with a set or two pair. You know, they're going to want to come back over the top, and that's how you're going to get most of your money. That's why I thought he had a set of sixes and would bet like that. Yeah. Set of aces, there's no hand that beats you. You got the deck crippled, and it's rainbow. And there's no straight there for a guy who would re-raise you. There's no way the guy's re-raising you with 4-5. So I would never bet out there unless I knew that he had ace-king and I had a set of sixes. But a set of aces, I mean, you got to let that guy hang himself. You got to let the hero hang himself there. Wow. That's so maybe he doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, and then the other thing, too, I thought was interesting is that he checks the turn, which is fine.
That's a good trap.
Right, a good trap. Again, there's nothing really that you worried about. I mean, I guess there are two clubs on the board at that point, but yeah. You could dismiss the fact that your opponent had clubs. But then when our hero bets out, I'm fine trying to re-raise there.
Yeah, yeah.
Just in case I'm wrong and he's able to complete some kind of weird something on the...
Jeez.
Or probably at that point, you got to assume that he's got a big ace or a set himself, and you've got him crushed.
But man. Well, give him something that's worth $10.
All right, Joe, here we go. It's not one of those laminated plastic hand ranking cards, but it's a little bit better. It's a set of Texas Home Strategy cards from GreatPokerHands.com. You can take those to the table and show Mike how to play ace from now on. And for everybody else, please send us some hands of the week. We got some good pros coming up soon. Hopefully, Lee Childs will be on the show pretty soon, so we'll have somebody to tear those hands apart for you. Email them to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Well, I'm glad to be in the land of the large bathrooms again. Good to be back. Nice show.
No doubt. I kicked off. You know, I spread the newspaper out this morning and stuff just because I could.
It was nice, wasn't it? I have some room. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.